Hey guys, I know it's been a while, but we're going to change things up. We're actually going to do monthly recaps now instead of every time we see a movie.
Yes, it'll be much easier for us to do it this way as opposed to trying to get to each movie that we see as an individual episode. And I think it's going to be better for not just for us, but also for you guys as well. So that way you're keeping in touch with us, keeping up with everything that we've seen, and hopefully you'll appreciate our opinions of everything.
Well, the first one we're going to start out with is going to be My Sailor, My Love, which takes place in a gorgeous, gorgeous Ireland. It's about a retired sailor who's also a widower. Or is it a widowee?
Widower.
Yeah. Widower.
Yeah, widower.
He has a strange relationship with his daughter, and what his daughter thinks is best for him isn't always the best for him. So she decides to put on a notice for a in-care-taker?
Yeah, in-home-care.
In-home-care-taker.
Yeah.
And who answers to that call is a widow, and they have a nice, short-lived romantic relationship.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I don't know if I'd consider it short-lived, mainly because of the fact that they have like a pretty good relationship building throughout the movie. And it ends up being like the daughter does not want anything to come of this because she thinks that she knows what's best for her dad.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, like her dad's still, his health is a little off, but he's still like mentally stable to make decisions on his own too.
Yes.
And he's very simple guy, I guess you could say. Like, very, someone who doesn't really require a whole lot.
Correct. He's very simple. He just wants life to be just a certain way, and he's used to it. So, you know, it's one of those lives where you just have day-to-day routine, and you don't want really much of anybody to kind of throw a wrench in it, and that kind of messes up with your life a little bit, which is what happened in this case.
Yeah, and with this one, like, there's a lot that we could get into, but it would kind of give away a lot of the movie, too. And I don't want to do that at this moment, but I will say, and like what Selena said earlier, the scenery in this movie is just gorgeous. And it's kind of hard to not say that when a movie is filmed in Ireland. Looking at this movie is just beautiful to watch. And the lead actor,
James Cosmo.
Yeah, James Cosmo. He is not really well known in like in terms of like lead acting roles, but people might know him from Game of Thrones as the Lord Commander of the Night Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Brid Brennan, I think her name is. It's
yes.
Kind of a hard name to say, but she's been in like Brooklyn and a bunch of other movies that were from Ireland or set in Ireland. And yeah, they are so, so gorgeous, like so cute together.
Yes, they have really great chemistry.
And it's one of those like it's one of those things where even though James Cosmo isn't really much of a lead actor, you can see he commands the screen when he's on
mm-hmm.
it. Like, he's always super good. I mean, he's great in Game of Thrones, he's great in Braveheart and everything else that he's been in, but with this, like, you see that he has that opportunity to take the lead role and just run with it.
And you can't help but just fall in love with this cute on-screen couple,
because
mm-hmm. it's just those little moments of where it's almost like in the spring of young love, where you have one kind of peeking at the other and then the other one kind of noticing that they're peeking at them and trying to shy away.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I really loved it. I was actually really surprised by this movie. I saw the trailer, we both did, and
mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, this is something that I think we're both going to love. But it moved me a lot more than I thought it was. I did not expect to kind of get really emotional toward the end
mm-hmm.
of it. But yeah, it's just, it's a lovely film, and the one who plays the daughter, she is definitely someone who you want to kind of pay close attention to, mainly because of the fact that there's a lot more going on in her life. Like, the opening scene is of
mm-hmm.
her going through some therapy sessions that she just hates, and so there's a lot more to her than what we initially get out of the trailer.
Yes.
And so it goes a different route than I thought it was going to go initially, but I think the way that it balances everything out is just near perfect. Like, it's really, really well done.
I love the casting in this. I think everybody did a great, great job. And the actress who plays the daughter, Catherine Walker, it's a great balance of opposite characters, because she has her own mindset of, as kids who have, you know, parents who are more elderly, we tend to think we know what is best for our parents. We know what they're going to need. But that's not necessarily what they need.
Right. And it's one of those things where you almost kind of want to hate her character for a little bit, but then it's like you also, because in some situations, like I've actually lived with someone who didn't really have this kind of situation, but in terms of like their mental capacity, and it kind of, I don't want to get into too much detail, but it's very relatable in that sense. And like they actually hit it really, really hard and really realistically. But yeah, I love this one a lot, and I'm hoping that if it's playing anywhere near you, you guys go see it in the theaters, because I think it's meant to be seen in a theater. We watched it at
Oh,
home.
yes.
Yeah, we watched it at home on a screener link, but I think it needs to be watched in a theater. But yeah, I love this one a lot. It is a little formulaic in some cases, but I'm not going to be knocking it too much because of that, because it's just beautiful.
It throws little bits here and there that's a little unexpected,
Yeah.
because I didn't think the ending was going to be that way,
Yeah.
but it was so sweet. It's definitely something that I can watch again. Like with Notebook, I can watch the maybe, like with Titanic, most people I can watch the first half and then the second half is like I'm not even going to bother
Yeah.
anymore. But with this, I mean, I can watch it all the way through. And I can talk about it without crying, without it being, because it's not like it's unemotional, it is very emotional, but it's a feel good kind of emotion that had a really good ending.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed with Notebook of Titanic, it had a good ending, but it just brought you to tears and it was just sadness.
Very sweet movie, and I'm really hoping that it finds, at least here in America, I hope it finds a good crowd. I think it's done okay over in Ireland when it first played over there, but yeah, I'm hoping to find a good crowd here. So rating wise, I'm gonna give this a 9. I like this one a
I
lot.
really like this a lot too, so I do agree with you. I can totally give this one a 9.
Yeah, I think it's coming to digital this month actually. So if you haven't had the chance to watch it in theaters, it'll be available to purchase and rent later this month. I'm not sure what on the day, but yeah, definitely give it a try. And yeah, we'll go on to the next movie. Next up, we're going to be talking about A Haunting in Venice. This is the third entry in Kenneth Branagh's Hercule Poirot series, based on the Agatha Christie novels. This is actually based on All Hallows Eve, so I don't think this one has actually been
No, you mean
adapted.
Halloween Party.
Oh, sorry. No, yeah, Halloween Party, my bad. It takes place on All Hallows Eve, but I don't think this one has actually been adapted before, or if it has, it's not really one that gets as much attention as Murder on the Orient Express or Death on the Nile or And Then There Was None. Is that another
Yeah,
one?
and then
Okay.
there was none. That
Yeah.
one's actually my favorite.
Yeah, so like a lot of Agatha Christie's stories have been adapted before or kind of twisted in a way to where it's modernized in a sense. But I think with the Poirot series, like they've focused a lot on mainly Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile. But with Halloween Party, this one is definitely a departure from your typical murder mystery movie and your typical Agatha Christie murder mystery movie. And it takes place post-World War II. Hercule Poirot is almost living in exile, and he's kind of retired from being a detective. But then he has something come back into his life. It was
Tina Fey's character?
Tina Fey's character.
She's the crime novelist.
Yeah, who kind of, and she's interesting because you see her, and I immediately got this feeling of
Agatha
Agatha
Christie.
Christie like living through Tina Fey's character. I don't know if it's like that in the book. I kind of doubt it, but yeah,
I
like,
like that portrayal though.
yeah, no, that portrayal was really intriguing to see, and it's almost like, Agatha Christie's character, or Tina Fey's character, is bringing Poirot back into modern day society, at least in that case, modern day society, and even here, where it's like we have a lot of murder mysteries now, but Poirot was kind of like one of the OGs of that time. And so he now, with Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile, while they've been fine for what they are, this one kind of brings him back into the spotlight of like, this is really how a good old-fashioned crime mystery should be. And I love the introduction of like jump scares, which I would never expect from this one.
Yes, there are jump scares in this one, but it's not a whole lot. So when we actually left the theater and there were people who watched it, they went in more jump scare. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this isn't a scary movie. Yes, the title is Haunting in Venice, but it's not a scary movie. It's a murder mystery movie.
Yeah, it's not like, I think they went in thinking The Conjuring, but it's not The Conjuring. And the Conjuring itself is like has murder mystery elements, but that's more supernatural, to whereas with this is already like a murder mystery, just like with some supernatural elements weaved into it.
Now are they real supernatural?
That is true.
So that's the thing that you guys will have to decide for yourselves once you watch it in the end.
Yeah, but the cast in this one, like how it is with the other ones, is just phenomenal. You know, Kenneth Branagh comes back as Hercule Poirot, and he's still really, really good in the role. Like, you can tell he just loves getting into that character.
Oh, yes.
And just the whole mustache and everything. And I think he's not as goofy as he was in the first movie. Because in the first movie, like, he's really into reading Charles Dickens. And like, he kind of makes a point of reading Charles Dickens almost every single time he does. But with this one, like, he's almost like a shell of what he once was. And then that's when Tina Fey's character comes into play and kind of brings him back to being the person that he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and also we should mention the fact that Michelle Yeoh is in this, and she plays the medium. She's having like an incredible career resurgence, it seems like.
Yes.
And because she was in the Mulan remake, right? Or no, the live action one.
Live action, no.
Okay, sorry. So she had Everything Ever All at Once.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had, no, she was in American Born in Chinese too, right?
You mean the TV show?
Yeah, the TV show.
Yes.
Yeah. So she had that, and then now she's got this.
Well, you kind of forgot another big movie.
Like a recent one?
Well, not like recent, but this was before Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Well, I know Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but...
Well, I wasn't thinking of that.
What were you thinking
of? That was a little too far for me.
What do you think?
Crazy Rich Asians!
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Crazy Rich Asians.
And she did also do another one for Netflix, too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
a little bit.
The Witcher or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah. I forgot the name.
But yeah, like she's having like this great resurgence in the last 5 years. And
at least in American
American movies and shows and everything. But yeah, seeing her here is really cool. Like she plays this mysterious medium. And then...
But she also has that little quirkiness in that. And I think that's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and... And then it's like, you know, you have to kind of solve the mystery of the murder that takes place. And I honestly was a little unexpected or not prepared for how violent it got in some scenes, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the murder that happens is just sudden. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, that... And the way that they show it, too, is not, like, grotesque, but it's just really...
Very Alfred... Alfred Hitchcock.
Hitchcock. Yes. But, yeah, this one also has, like... Tina Fey, like we said, she's great as that murder mystery novelist, like Agatha Christie replica. Then you have Jude Hill, who was a little boy in Belfast.
Oh, I was wondering why he looked familiar.
Yeah, he's really great.
And Jamie Dornan.
Jamie Dornan, like, even though he had, because he was Christian Grey.
Yes.
Yeah, so, even though he had those movies attached to him, like, he's been able to kind of distance himself really, really far from
And do other different types of projects.
Yeah, so, like, this one and The Fall. I think The Fall was about the time that 50 Shades was coming out, but he's doing really great. He's great in this one. I really like this one a lot. I think it, by distancing itself, not really distancing itself, but, like, kind of setting a different tone for the murder mystery, and especially for the Agatha Christie type murder mysteries, it almost breaks some new ground in a way for this genre.
And I'm wondering for this movie or book, is because I haven't read this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if it's like that because Poirot's already in his retirement.
Yeah.
He's already decided, you know, he's had it. He's that one case that did it for him.
Mm-hmm.
He had that one. Just like with Sherlock Holmes, you know.
Yeah.
You have that, that's it. I can't do this anymore. I can't take humanity and its deceitfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, this case, which is different from all the other cases, because all of the other stories were very much, everybody had a hand in this. Mm-hmm. This also had, everybody had a hand to this. But it was very different from Murder on the Orient Express, and also Death of Nile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think because the whole whodunit mystery genre has kind of had a resurgence ever since the first murder, or the Kenneth Branagh Murder on the Orient Express came out. Because we had, like, you know, Knives Out come out recently, and then we had the sequel to that, and then the sequel to the Murder on the Orient Express. And there's been a few others, too, that have, like, kind of taken Agatha Christie's genre and approached it differently. So, like, I think Game Night with Jason Bateman was kind of like that, but more comical.
Yeah.
And, hey, I like that movie. But yeah, like, there's definitely been... but the old-fashioned murder mystery, I think that Agatha Christie did really well on. There's no way that anyone else could really take it like how Kenneth Branagh has taken it.
Yes.
And I think And granted, you know, Poirot, the TV series, I think is, I don't think it's still going, but it's still pretty popular on like Amazon Prime and PBS. And the other series that have like come before it, like those are still pretty popular with the murder mystery fans. But I think bringing it into a new generation and into new audiences, the way that Branagh does it is definitely more appealing.
Yes, and I will say, because I've watched the TV versions of it too, it's very different on the approach of it. It's almost like the TV versions are too serious. Not saying crime and mystery is not serious, but it's almost like there's no little bit of comedy into it that makes you kind of want to be very invested in it. With Kenneth Branagh, it's you have that seriousness of him wanting to solve it, but you have that little bit of like his mischievousness in it too that I really love.
He makes it really fun and, like I said, universally appealing. It's not like very dry or very mundane or anything like that. It's a universal appeal. And the way that he films this movie too, there's a lot of different what they call Dutch angles, where it's like kind of that up close, awkward offset angle to it.
Oh, like what
That
I like to do.
And I think that one actually, like having a lot of those angles in it, kind of gives that whole mysterious vibe to it too, that works really well. So yeah, I like this one a lot, and I was a little uncertain about going into the new Kenneth Branagh Poirot movie because of the fact that the other ones were like just fine to me, but I'm actually looking forward now to another one from him. So yeah, but I like this one a lot. I'm gonna give it an 8.
Only an 8?
I can go 8.5.
Well, what do you okay? So you're gonna go with an 8. So you stick with your 8.
Okay.
I'm actually gonna go with probably, I don't know, maybe 8.75.
Oh wow, okay, you're definitely doing it in a different increment than me
I
before.
income, yeah. Well, because there's like little bits here and there that I can see maybe a little bit of improvement, maybe a little different, but I still loved it and then I enjoyed it for how it was.
I think this is definitely like an enjoyable, it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't break any, like a lot of new ground on the murder mystery, but I think by having the horror element included into it kind of gives that new twist that it needs. And so maybe Branagh can, for the next one, bring in another different take on it, but only time will tell, and we'll see how the next
Yeah.
one does.
And I don't know, maybe I've gotten a little bit better in guessing who'd done it, and I've kind of seen the original writers' methodology of it. So it was easier for me to guess, oh, I know who did it, easier and faster. Or I know this person has something to do with it, but I don't know how. But I know there's that this is important for some reason.
Definitely, I think it's still in theaters, so yeah, definitely go check it out when you guys can. All right, and we will go on to the next one.
All right, next up we have The Whale. It stars with Brendan Fraser, one of my all-time favorites. He plays Charlie, who is a morbidly obese teacher who does online teaching without his camera on, and he's mostly it's because he's ashamed.
Yeah, he's like not happy of himself, and he doesn't want any others to judge him, especially those that don't know him. And he is like super big. Like it's to a point where he doesn't leave his house really. He just orders all his food from like some pizza place, or he has his
His best friend, a nurse, Ellie.
yeah, she's like a nurse.
Oh no, sorry, Ellie is the
Daughter,
daughter. Sorry, Liz.
Liz, yeah, she's a nurse and is really Charlie's only friend, who comes over, and even though she's a nurse and like telling him, hey, you have to go to the hospital, hey, you have to do this, she's always bringing him like meatball sandwiches and all this other like junk food that's not really good for him. So it's one of those things where like she's kind of feeding into his bad
Habit.
habit, but then also telling him, hey, you should take care of yourself. So it's kind of like a contradictory thing that
Well,
she's
yeah,
doing in a
and because
way.
she's a nurse, she the only advice she can give is, hey, you need to go to the hospital. Like you're gonna die. You don't have much time to live. You need to go to the hospital. But because he refuses, she can't force him to go. So the only, I think the issue that I have with the character is she became the enabler. And like you said, bringing him unhealthy food and like what I told you, well, if I was his friend, if I wanted him to get up and do some kind of moderate exercise, because she does try to get him to with the wheelchair, but I would just be like, well, I'm gonna give you this whole plate of celery and carrots, and if you really want that bucket of fried chicken, you go walk to it. This is what you're gonna get with me.
And the thing with this movie is like there was a lot of controversy about them casting Brendan Fraser in it because he's not a fat person in real life. Or he's not like a morbidly obese person in real life, mm-hmm. I should say. I honestly don't think that is...
You think it matters.
Exactly. Because it's called acting for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just cast someone who is already 600 pounds and expect them to be as horrific in this role as Brendan Fraser is. Because Brendan Fraser, he's like a lot of other actors where they had their big rise in like certain decades. So for him, it was the 90s and the 2000s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they kind of fade away. I know for him, like he had a lot of issues with the Hollywood industry. And so they kind of forced him to be out of the limelight for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's kind of making his comeback with this Killers of the Flower Moon coming out pretty soon.
Mm.
And so like he's had a resurgent, which I'm...
Hooray for him.
Yeah, hooray for him because...
I'm glad he won an award, by the way.
Yeah, I'm glad he won an Oscar for this because holy cow, like he just commands the screen. Like I could not really... Like I could tell as Brendan Fraser, like he doesn't really hide in the role like mm-hmm. how Gary Oldman hides in like playing Winston Churchill or Harry Truman.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's just like you see the side of Brendan Fraser that you don't really see before. Granted, we've seen him in some dramatic roles like Crash.
But this was very vulnerable.
Yeah, this was very vulnerable. And it's also very limited too, to whereas like with something like Crash, that's more like multiple stories intersected mm-hmm. into one. This is just maybe five actors in the whole movie. And it's based on a play of the same name. So, and it definitely has that play feel to mm-hmm. it too, where it's only just one setting and maybe like some external shots, but
but not even a whole lot. It's really just outside of his porch area.
Yeah, his apartment. But I'm kind of curious to see how this plays out in like a Broadway play, or not really a Broadway play, but
just
like
a stage play.
Yeah, stage, mm-hmm. stage play. But yeah, Brendan Fraser is phenomenal. This is directed by Darren Aronofsky, who did Black Swan and Mother and The Wrestler. It kind of has that same feel to The Wrestler where he cast someone who was like really popular during a certain decade and then kind of had a
phasing
out and now is making a comeback. And that in The Wrestler's case, it was Mickey Rourke. And here it's Brendan Fraser. So, and I think Aronofsky, like he doesn't repeat a lot of the things that he did with The Wrestler. But at the same time, like he does a great job in bringing these actors who we all loved at one point
mm-hmm.
and kind of forgot about. But then like bringing them back and saying, hey, they're still here. They're still great. It's just, you know, with Mickey Rourke's case, he had a lot of like run-ins with the law and other things. And then Brendan Fraser's, like I said, he just had a lot of other things with the Hollywood industry.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I like how Darren Aronofsky can be like bring out these great performances in people. And also how most of his films are really, really dark and really kind of hard to watch. But this is hard to watch for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't really make this like a fat, empowering movie. Because I think that's kind of a ridiculous term. Like, I don't want to say a ridiculous term, but...
It's not, realistically, if you want to look at it for health-wise,
yeah.
right? You don't want to do all this... obesity empowerment kind of thing. And that's not what this movie is all about. This movie is about what depression does to you
mm-hmm.
and how it can really affect you health-wise and also with your sociability. He has no friends but one. And that one friend is basically the only thread that he has. And then later on, his daughter, who's played by Sadie Sink,
mm-hmm.
which is Max in Stranger Things, comes along and, you know, kind of tries to be that other thread in his life to kind of keep you know, tugging him, to pull him along and want him to live and not die. And Sadie's character, it's actually very different from Hong Chau's character who plays Liz.
Yeah.
Because you have Hong Chau's character who is the enabler and you have Sadie Sink's character who is very much like Max. She plays the tough chick who... thinks that she's going to take on the whole world and, you know, she can take it on. But in reality, she understands so much and she has so much compassion. She doesn't show it,
mm-hmm.
but instead she does it in a different way.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things too. So his daughter, like he and the Brendan Fraser and the wife are divorced in the movie and he actually ends up going for someone else. They kind of explain more into that and like the reasoning behind his depression. And when Sadie Sink comes into play, she actually is one of those things like, you were a better person at one point. you know, I didn't really get to know you, and now it's like you've turned into this.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that you can be better, and you're just not being better.
But the same, the funny thing is, that's what Brendan Fraser basically said to her. It's like, I know you are better than this, but you're just not applying yourself. Like, you can, like, you should. But she does in different ways, like with Ty Simpkins' character, Thomas, the Christian missionary. You know, the only other person who tries to intervene with his life and try to bring God into his life. But Brendan Fraser's like, no, I don't want it. Mm-hmm. I don't need it. You don't understand, because your faith is what basically destroyed the thing that I love.
Yeah. And that was one of the things I was a little concerned about when watching this, because I know Darren Aronofsky can introduce a lot of religious elements into his movies, like with Mother. That was, like, obviously a big retelling of the Bible, or like certain parts of the Bible. And when he brought that Christian character into this, I didn't know if it was going to be more demeaning of the Christian faith, or if it's going to be something that is supportive in a way. And it actually balances out to where, you know, you have Brendan Fraser's side and how he sees it, and then the Christian side and how he sees it, and like them trying to come to an agreement and the battle that that can bring as well.
Yep.
And it's really well played out, and it's not insulting
to either
Christian people or to obese people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where this actually is critical of is mainly just like giving up on your life, and mainly just falling into that deep sea of depression, and finding a hard, you know, finding the way to come out of it can be really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is really critical of really obese people. And I know that there are some people who are like fat activists and they are proud of being fat. I think this movie kind of shines a light on how I don't think you should be proud, you know, to be that way.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't living the correct lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because if you are living a lifestyle where you are moderately active, you're doing something, but, you know, this is just the way you want to be, this is what you want to eat. But health-wise, you're not too far off. And mentally balanced, right?
Yes.
You're not too far off. But with, you know, Brendan Fraser's case in this movie, it was more led to, at first it was depression, and then it was self-guilt. And all of that just brings it on. You just start eating and eating and eating and packing on all those pounds. Now you're ashamed of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see what people, you know, when people are seeing you and they're hiding that fact of, oh my God, like, this is disgusting. But you know that's what they're thinking. And so then you get even more self-depressed. But what can you do? You're already in the situation. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and eat myself to death. It's basically at a point in the movie, I think it showed it in the trailers, that he was at that point where he wanted to. Now, it's up to you guys as listeners, if you have watched this movie, and or if you are going to be at the end, what you think happens to his life.
Yeah, and like Darren Aronofsky doesn't really give it like away right away. He does a very incredible job of just kind of showing this like interpretation of like, you could either go this way with how he went about his life, or you go this way with how he went about his life. And it's very well done. I actually liked this one a lot. I know it took us a while to finally watch it because of the fact that we missed it in theaters, and then we actually ended up watching it on Showtime.
Yeah, and then I was like, am I gonna cry? I did cry, but it was a good cry.
And I think it's one of those things too, when I know it's gonna be something that you're probably gonna cry at, it's a little bit harder to actually sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
Because I know for you it's gonna be harder to anticipate that moment. Like, you know it's going to happen, but
I don't know when it's going to happen. Exactly. When it happens, I waterfall.
But yeah, even I was just like a little taken aback by how impactful and emotional this movie is. And granted, it is controversial, but I also think that with Darren Aronofsky, controversy kind of comes with whatever he directs, whether it's Black Swan or Mother or even Noah.
See, and I guess that's where I don't understand why it can be such a controversy, because I see the double side of things. And, you know, with this movie, it brings both sides of it, and it gives you both sides of explanation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all one-sided. Now, if it was all one-sided, I can understand, because then you don't have the other side of the story to tell. But this one tells both sides.
Yeah.
So it's really surprising to me how there's such a big controversy about this.
I don't know. I think a lot of people might also just kind of try to find something to be critical of it and make it like the mainstream voice of that, but...
But is it really something needed, guys? I mean, come on.
Yeah, no kidding. But honestly, like, if you guys haven't seen it, I hope you do, and I hope you kind of give your own judgment of it, despite what others may have said about it, you know, critically speaking. But I love this movie, and I think Aronofsky, like I said, he can make it hard to watch. And even in just, like, some of the descriptions of what Brendan Fraser says he's going through, like, you hear about it, and it's like, just, you know, mm-hmm. getting that kind of sick feeling down your spine or in your stomach. Yeah, I love this one a lot. And like I said, I'm probably going to give it like a 9.5. Like, it's really, yeah. really, really close to being a 10. But I think it's just also because, like, it is a little difficult in some scenes. And I don't know how much of a rewatch factor it has to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a great film. I loved it a lot. But in terms of, like, having to be a rewatch, I don't know how often that's going to happen. The Wrestler, on the other hand, and even, like, Black Swan, I've seen a couple times, but, yeah, with this one, it's a little bit harder.
Well, this one, I agree with you, 9.5, definitely. The rewatch value of it, you know, it's probably going to be, for me, it's probably going to want to be those couple years, I'll pick it up again, you know, and rewatch it once, and then another couple of years, maybe. But, yeah, it's just one of those where it just hits you, and you just leave with whatever feeling that you want to leave with.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one straight, oh, you're going to leave with happiness, or you're going to live, you know, leave with sadness. It's just really like you're kind of all over the place, and it makes you think.
All right, now we're going on to our last movie of this podcast. So the last movie we're going to talk about is School of Rock. And the reason why we're talking about this is because this is
actually... The 10-year anniversary is almost coming up.
20th anniversary.
20th. I don't know how to do math.
That's okay. But no, I remember when I first worked at the movie theater and this movie had come out. And honestly, like, it took me a little bit to watch it because I'm like, I don't know. Like, it looks kind of silly. It doesn't really look like it would be something I'd be into.
Silly, though.
No, it is silly and it is fun. But it's also, like, rewatching it this time around, it's so well crafted and so well shot. Like, the opening scene when it has the credits on the guy's jacket and, like, it's following him into that bar or into the venue. And, like, the credits of, like, Paramount Picture Presents, and then, like, the posters of, like, this is this kind of production, and then School of Rock on the main, like, banner. It's like, that's really creative. And then there are certain other scenes where it's kind of done, like, in a one-track, very smooth take. And I honestly don't think that if someone else had directed this movie, it would be as well done as it is. But yeah, this tells the story of Dewey Finn, who is kind of like a, what's the term I would say for him? Like, he's really passionate about his music, but he doesn't really get along with other people and, like, the direction he wants to take things. He ends up getting fired from the band that he's in.
Which he founded.
And then, you know, he's trying to find ways to make rent because he's past due on his rent. But then, so he ends up, his roommate and his...
Best friend and old bandmate.
Yeah, an old bandmate is a substitute teacher and, you know, is liking his life. But, you know, it's... And then, so
no, is he really liking his life, or is it because his girlfriend is forcing him into that life? So he's liking it because he has a girlfriend.
That is true. But, yeah, so one day there's a call that comes to the apartment that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for a substitute teaching gig at this school. And so Dewey decides to disguise himself as his friend.
Ned Schneebly.
And so he takes up this teaching gig at the school. And it's this very, like, prestigious, like, super expensive...
It's a private academy.
Private academy, yeah. So, and he doesn't go by the books. Like, there's this curriculum that he has to go by, but he's like, you know what? No. We're going to do what I want to do. And that's just, like, you know, play music and have fun. And then he ends up getting all the kids into playing. He's like, actually has them discover their passion for what they want to do.
Because they're already playing in band.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he, you know... hears the band playing, he goes and peeks at the window. He's like, oh my God, some of these kids are really awesome. You know, the pianist, and then you have the one playing the cello, who later on plays the bass. He's like, oh, you know how to play cello, right? Okay, well, here's the bass. It's kind of the same thing. I'm like, one's playing with fingers, one's playing with the bow, and one's huge and one's not.
But yeah, he wants to form this band because the Battle of the Bands is coming up, and, like, this would be, for him, he's seen this as a great opportunity to, you know, get a band going and hopefully get, like, his former bandmates back together and everything. But also, like, he just sees this as, like, a way to get money to help pay the back rent as well. And then, like, the disguise kind of starts to slowly unravel, mm-hmm. and, like, he kind of becomes revealed for who he is. I don't want to get, like, too much into it, but mm-hmm. obviously it's 20 years old. I think most people that have seen it, that want to see it by now, have seen it already. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this is still, like, it holds up so well.
Oh, it does.
And Jack Black is, you know, take how you will of him now, and, like, a lot of stuff he does now. He's still kind of that goofy person, but... here, I think, is what he made a name for himself in doing, and I think what Richard Linklater, the director, who's done a bunch of independent films, this helped him break into, like, the mainstream crowd and show that he can be a great director for both indies and mainstream fare. And, like, the music is great. When they're mm-hmm. some of the songs they come up with are a lot of fun to listen to. It's really, really cute. It's super humorous. The principal,
John Cusack.
So funny. But yeah, no, I still love this movie. I'm glad that I got the Steelbook to review.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a fun revisit. And I just love how you have, you know, Jack Black's character, who is that irresponsible adult who still tries to play on his dream of winning Battle of the Bands, when everybody says he himself, not the bandmates, but just Jack Black himself, sucks.
Yeah.
Which is why he got kicked out. And then he goes and discover, you know, into this substitute teaching gig, discovers these kids, gets everybody in the class involved, whether they are going to be security, back vocals, the guitarist, bassist, keyboard, mm-hmm. drummer, and then soundproofing their room with basically, what is it, like towels and blankets and stuff, and shoving it on the door. It's great to see. And, you know, later on you have Jack Black doing this for selfish reason. Then it's like, but, you know, the kids have worked so hard. The kids have practiced so hard, lying about them being on some kind of rare disease and they're all about to be dead, trying to get them on the list.
Jeez.
It was, at the end, it was all about them. It wasn't about him making his band. It was about the kids. Yeah.
And it's like, it's one of those things where you have that battle with, you know, the kids and their parents, and mm-hmm. the parents going after Jack Black, like, how could you do this to us? We spent so much money. But it's like, I think it's also a good lesson for, like, you know, you want the best for your kids, but you also have to listen to them and hear what they want as well. And then try to find that good balance in, like, being a good parent and setting your kid on the right path, but also not, like, just putting them into this, like, certain...
Cookie cutter approach
and it's a cookie cutter route to where they're going to end up feeling miserable because, like, they're being forced into something that they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and it's great to see that with School of Rock, how, like, it's still, it's not really talked about a lot, but there are different iterations of it that still kind of keep it going. Like, the Andrew Lloyd Webber made a musical out of it. They made a TV series out of it. So, like, it's still, like, relevant. Really popular, really relevant amongst the younger crowds, too. And I think that, you know, even though this movie didn't, like, become a prestigious Oscar winner or anything like that, I don't think it needs to be.
No.
I think it's just one of those, like, it's like The Princess Bride, where it's like you introduce it to every generation and it's going to just keep going and going mm-hmm. and going. And so I'm really excited what the next 20 years will be like for this movie. And, you know, when the kids that watched it in 2003... watch it with their kids now, you know, just kind of see how it takes on that new life. So
yeah, because it's one of those little silly, feel-good kind of movies where you don't really have to pay a whole lot of attention to it, and you still understand what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but this was definitely still a lot of fun to rewatch, and yeah, I liked it a lot still to this day. So I'll give it a 9. I liked it. I think a solid 9 is really good.
Wow, I didn't give it that high. I gave it about an 8.
Oh, that's a little too low.
I don't think it's... Well, I mean, it's Jack Black being Jack Black.
Okay, yeah. But so. If you also think about it, like, Jack Black back in the day, like, he had maybe a couple movies like Shallow Hal and maybe mm-hmm. one or two others. But I think this is what really set him to be someone who can be family friendly, but yeah. also have that side of him that's more, like, dark. Not dark, but adult humor. Grotesque kind of humor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this definitely kind of set a new... ground for him, because then he went on to do Goosebumps, and then he went on to do some other kind of...
There's one big one that you kind of forgot that really...
Kung Fu Panda.
There you
yes.
go. There you go.
And then even, like, you know, setting him up for doing more dramatic stuff, like King Kong, you know, which you would not have expected him to do.
That one was good.
Even like at that time, I was like, wait, Jack Black can do drama? Like, you don't see that. And you don't see him do it now, but it's like, it's interesting to see him like take these different approaches to his career and everything. But
I think it's funny you said that about King Kong, because I think that was my reaction, was like, wait, he's not doing comedy?
Yeah.
He's not doing cartoon? Like, can he do this?
Yeah.
You know what? He can.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those very unexpected dark horses that if you give him the chance, and if he really wanted to, he can do it.
There's another movie that he did with Richard Linklater, the director of School of Rock, called Bernie. And it's actually a true story about how this guy was like he murdered someone that he was like kind of taking care of. If I remember the plot correctly, but it's really like that dark kind of humor, but it's not like super uncomfortable kind of humor. But it's, if I can find it again, like, it's definitely something that you should watch. It's really, really good. But yeah, School of Rock, it's out on Blu-ray for the 20th anniversary. And yeah, I hope you guys check it out.
It's definitely great. If not, check it out in the library. It's a great watch for kids.
Or it's also on like the streaming services. I think it's on like Netflix or Pluto or something like that. Mm. So, but yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us. This was a lot of fun to do this again.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next month.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell you what we're going to see or going to give you for reviews, because that's going to happen like as the month goes along, and then...
And decide what we see.
Yep, exactly.
And spin our little wheel.
All right, bye, guys.
All right, bye. Take care.